Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Stephen F. Hayward, the Edward Gaylord Distinguished Visiting Professor at Pepperdine University School of Public Policy, to guide me through a fresh revelation. The apocalypse is not imminent. We know this because Bill Gates himself, the man who put together Microsoft once upon a time and has been a philanthropist these last years, has announced that the apocalypse is not imminent and perhaps the environment is not going to plunge us into toxic oceans and the end of seasons by the end of the 21st century. Stephen, I exaggerate only a little bit because my memory of this statement by Mr. Gates was shocking to many of the editorial pages of the United States, and there were a lot of caveats about his remark. What strikes you about his declaration that he's changed his mind? What surprised you about it? Good evening to you.
Right. Well, thanks, John. Always good to join you about these great topics. Well, I think there are three things quickly. One, that he said it at all. I mean, he's been aligned with the climate alarmist camp for many years, and his foundation, which is one of the largest in the country, has spent a lot of money on climate change advocacy and research and so forth. Second, it's something that I think he would not have said or could not have said even 2 years ago. Remember that the main line for people like, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Al Gore, pick any prominent Democrat, John Kerry won't shut up about it, is that we live in the time of a climate crisis, an existential crisis threatening the survival of humanity itself. So you just couldn't say, there have always been the so-called climate skeptics who for 30 years or more have been saying this phenomenon is overestimated and over-exaggerated and the remedies are crazy, but they were always marginalized. And so for Bill Gates, a person of his prominence, to say this, I think point number three is kind of the death knell for apocalyptic environmentalism. I think it's been a long time in coming for reasons we can go into. But the fact that, for example, the Sierra Club is imploding, lots of environmental groups are laying off people. This is very unusual when you have a Republican president. Usually environmental activism thrives when there's a Republican in the White House. But it's not happening now. And I think that tells you that the long cycle of environmental doom and gloom, which goes back at least to 1970, if not earlier, has finally hit the wall.
I was struck by the fact that Mr. Gates doesn't seem to be attached to the same planet that I'm attached to. This sentence, although climate change will have serious consequences, particularly for people in the poorest countries, it will not lead to humanity's demise. People will be able to live and thrive in most places on Earth for the foreseeable future. Emissions projections have gone down, and with the right policies and investments, innovation will allow us to drive emissions down much further. Is this news to him?
It's news to a lot of people, although I should give him credit for this. It is true that if you read carefully, which almost no one does, the quote-unquote official consensus science of the United Nations, they have been scaling back their estimates of future emissions and future temperature rises and future consequences for quite a while now. But the activists and the advocates ignore all of that. And Gates does actually pay attention to these details. The one place where I think he's mistaken is saying that whatever climate change we might have will affect the poorest the most. On the surface, that's true, except the remedy is not, strangling energy production and use in the world. It's for poor countries to get rich faster. And that's actually been the strategy for India and China for the last 30 years, is they've said, look, our greatest way to fight any possible problems from climate change is to be a prosperous country that allows us to afford better technology and to adapt to whatever changes might come our way for whatever reason they come our way.
I enjoyed your piece of Civitas Outlook very much for this reason. You look for the origins of the gloom and you look for the exit of the gloom. And while there might be more to learn, you've identified 1960 as a critical year for at least we should start to look for the gloom. What was 1960 about? The Kennedy, Nixon, two young men running for the presidency.
Right.
What was their opinion of the environment? Did they talk about it, Stephen?
Right. Yeah. Well, especially Kennedy, since he won the election and, you know, was the sort of mainstream liberal of the time. And in those days, liberals were all about growth. I mean, remember, what was Kennedy's motto? Let's get the country moving again, because we thought it had been growing slowly or that the country was sluggish under Eisenhower. And, you know, they wanted a go-go economy. And so that's why Kennedy embraced, for example, income tax cuts. But also they thought we'll have all this money and we can solve our social problems. So it was an optimistic creed. But by the time you got to 1970 and the first Earth Day, suddenly growth liberalism or, you know, abundant liberalism had turned into the limits to growth. That was the dominant theme of the 70s. So you had politicians like Jimmy Carter when he became president, or my governor for life starting then, Jerry Brown, all embraced small is beautiful. We have limits to growth. We have to scale back our expectations. We're running out of everything. We're going to choke on pollution. And those latter two claims that we're going to run out of resources and choke on pollution were both completely wrong. We're not short of resources, and we prove that we have the technology to dramatically reduce pollution, which we have done here and increasingly around the world. So the whole edifice of it really traces back to Malthusianism has crumbled intellectually and empirically. And now more and more thought leaders like Gates are catching up to that fact.
You've identified 1960 as liberalism celebrating prosperity and growth, 1970 as the opposite lesson. We've got to be careful. We've got limited resources. We must be judicious. What happened in between? Kennedy's assassination, the Great Right. Society, civil rights, the Vietnam War, when Russia overran Czechoslovakia and reasserted the Soviet boot. All of that, what did that do to liberalism in your measure these many decades later, Stephen?
Right. Well, I think the 60s was a decade when everything went wrong against expectation of liberals, right? They started the decade thinking we had a bright, promising future. And by the end of the 60s, an awful lot of leading liberals were discouraged, would be to put it mildly. A lot of them were saying they were now ashamed. A couple of them said, leading liberals would say, of what had happened to the country and of what they had once believed. And they were rethinking their views. So, you know, the just to pick a few examples, the Democratic Party had been internationalist, strongly anti-communist. And, you know, the Vietnam War, which was the liberals' war, remember, had gone so badly that they became an anti-war party, reflexively so, much less anti-communist than they had been in the past. And then social policy was a disaster. So civil rights, long overdue, trying to do something for the cities, a good idea, but they all backfired. The problems of poverty got worse. We had wave after wave of riots in the cities. Crime was out of control. And so I think liberalism was pretty badly discredited by the end of the 70s. And that's why you then had 20 years of Republican landslides for the most part, first Nixon and then Reagan twice. So the 60s were a disaster for liberalism, and they've never completely climbed out of it. Here and there, they have fits and starts of some improvement. But I think they're still hobbled by that very pessimistic view of the country and how the world works.
Big things in big ways. Nothing is too expensive for us. Well, right. Actually, there are problems with that, as we've seen today, because it's the great society and the impulse of the state offering a helping hand that has hobbled the national will to build big things. Coming out of the 60s, then, the retreat included take care of everybody all the time, the creation of an enormous network, social services network, that is routinely identified as money poorly spent. Is that part of liberalism today? Do they remember the mistakes they made?
I think most liberals still do not acknowledge the mistakes they made. I mean, once in a while, you'll have someone like Bill Clinton in the 90s saying we need to reform welfare as we know it. He was right about that. And we did make some sensible reforms that have been eroded ever since. But I think that the dominant principle of the left today is radical egalitarianism and redistributionism. And so when it comes to social programs, if you produce evidence that they don't work or backfire, I think they're uninterested or unpersuaded because they actually view an awful lot of our social programs as de facto means to redistribute wealth. So they're not even worried about fraud. You know, it's shocking to me that we have 42 million Americans today on food stamps, as we used to call it. It's called SNAP now, I guess, right? That's more than 10% of the population that needs assistance to eat in a country where food is abundant. And I know we have inflation problems, but I think you say to a liberal, isn't that a high number of people? They'll say, actually, we would like it to be more, because I think they see SNAP and programs like that as backdoor ways of redistributing wealth, whether the people deserve it or not.
So that's gloomy. Let's turn. Yeah. Let's look at California. You know California.
I live here, unfortunately. Yes.
The homeless. Right now, is there an explanation? Is that part of the gloom, the homeless? This is the result of not having enough? Is that the case made?
Well, I mean, it's often said that, you know, we don't build enough housing, which is correct. And that's why we have homeless people. But an awful lot of the homeless are people who have mental illness, have bad drug addictions and so forth. And just building more homes is not going to solve that. But I think the real scandal is that I think the tab now is in the last 10, 15 years, California has spent something like $25 billion on homelessness programs, and the number of homeless has doubled. So, I mean, I draw a straight line correlation here. The more money you spend on the problem, the worse it's going to get, because most of that money doesn't actually go to helping the homeless. It goes to social service providers and bureaucrats. And there was a report by the state auditor in California 2-3 years ago that showed that there was no coordination of any of the programs, no measurement of outcomes, no way of judging their effectiveness. And so what's the remedy that were recommended by Mayor Bass in L.A. or Governor Newsom? Well, let's spend even more on homelessness. You know, if we haven't spent enough, it's because if we haven't solved the problem, it's because we haven't spent enough money. That just seems insane.
There is a bright moment. And when we come back, abundance. Stephen Hayward from Pepperdine University, writing at Civitas Outlook, part of Civitas Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date, it notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.